and Tom recognized the dim glint of the transparent guard of his oxygen helmet. The Powan leaned forward, black eyes squinting.
"You," Gore seethed.
"I get that reaction a lot, actually,"
Han admitted.
"The silly little smuggler from Friragos."
"I get that one too, to be honest."
Gore sat back, satisfied.
"You have aged very poorly, human."
"And you still look like an emaciated stick of cheese that someone shoved rat teeth into and left out in the sun to rot."
"It couldn't have been you whom I'd had the run-in with in these very remnants 2 years before that night at Friragos, could it? That opponent seemed more worthy somehow."
"Now you're just being rude."
"Why have you hailed me?"
That was a great question. Han nudged Peepa with his boot, because whatever it was she was trying to do, she'd better do it soon. She swatted him and kept typing. Probably for the best.
"Well,"
Han said,
"did you wish to witness the face of the one who is about to send you to your fiery death and bring a new order to the galaxy?"
"Funny you should mention that,"
Han said, grateful for the encouragement.
"I was wondering what exactly the deal is with this whole droid apocalypse you and your little buddies keep going on about."
"Ah.
We visited that quaint mountainside resort you've got, and I gotta be honest with you."
The staticky sound system suddenly blared into Han's ears. At first he thought Taka had sneaked aboard the Chevalier. Then he realized Gore was cringing and frantically pushing buttons on his console.
"What is this?"
Gore yelled.
"Wait."
Han got real close to the comm to make sure his voice came through clearly.
"Are you trying to tell me you've never heard of Snograth and the Mogwars?"
Peepa was still typing, paying no mind to the music, which meant she was working on something else entirely. And that meant that somewhere in that ship, Taka was alive and messing with Gore. Han felt suddenly lighter, as if he'd been carrying around a whole space station's worth of worry on his back since the Vermilion had gone missing. And now at least some of it had drifted off into the atmosphere.
"Turn this infernal noise off!"
Gore yelled as Han danced a little jig to the thrashing riffs and manic screams. Peepa yelled and pushed a button. Han looked down at her. He'd never realized the extent to which Ewoks could smile until that moment. Usually their little mouths were kind of lost under all that bushy fur. Peepa stretched wide, her pearly teeth glinting out at him.
"What did you..."
She pointed out at the Vermilion just as Gore yelled something unintelligible. The lid of the cockpit sprang open, and the ship itself seemed to hawk him out like a giant Powan snotball. Han opened fire, but Gore had already slung a scatter blaster out from over his shoulder and was spraying the damaged Chevalier. Han swung them out of the way, his own shots going wide and destroying a passing moon remnant instead. And then Gore was gone.
"Damn it!"
Han muttered, accelerating toward the Vermilion.
"A nice work, Peepa."
He reached down, not taking his eyes off the empty space where Gore had just been, and high-fived the Ewok.
"Ed!"
Lando said over the comm. He sounded out of breath.
"Get to the Vermilion and make sure the others are okay. I'm going after him."
"Copy, Lando,"
Han said.
"Be careful out there."
He watched as Lando's space-suited form burst out from the Chevalier and jetted after Gore into the Masulan remnants. The Masulan remnants. Now. Silence. The galaxy felt so huge, and Lando felt so very tiny within it. There was nothing like floating out in the empty, with only a couple of layers of super-stretched Durafiber, a jetpack, and an oxygen helmet to to make you miss being nestled in the gentle womb of 1,000 tons of steel and ion shields. Some distant sun swung slightly higher in its infinite cycle, sent a dazzling splash of illumination dancing across the tops of slowly turning ice asteroids all around him. Beyond the remnants, a nebula shifted and writhed in its slow-motion space waltz. In systems all across the galaxy, droids went about their business with the organics who trusted them. Yet at any moment, they could be transformed into psychotic, murder-bent war machines. Blaster rifle primed and steady in his hands, Lando let his jetpack thruster simmer to a low burn as he came up on the shadowy side of an ice asteroid. Gore had blasted off between this one and the one spinning nearby, and then he'd vanished, which meant he was probably lying in wait somewhere. Lando had a dagger strapped to his boot, a second blaster on his hip, and a whole clip of detonators clipped to his belt. He would end Gore and this mess, destroy the damn phalanx, and be free of this whole situation for good. But first, he had to find Gore before Gore found him.
"So,"
a raspy voice whispered into his calm,
"you have done as I asked, Mr. Calrissian, and I expressed my gratitude by letting you walk away from the Graven Monastery in one piece."
Lando glanced out into the remnants, saw nothing, ducked back into the shadows.
"Yeah,"
he said, trying not to sound out of breath.
"That was awful nice of you."
"And yet you repay me with this, charging after me like a crazed maniac with your scruffy maniac friend."
Lando chuckled and shook his head.
"Did you really think, Fazengor, that I was just gonna roll over and let you turn a bunch of droids into killers? Did I seem like that kind of guy?"
"I thought you might, to be honest,"
Gore hissed.
"But since I wasn't sure, I did take precautions."
Lando edged around the side of the asteroid, rifle first. A series of shots blasted the wall beside him, and he ducked back behind the cover.
"Oh, and another thing,"
Gore said.
"As you know, I paid a visit to your little floating city on Bespin."
"That was you,"
Lando growled, making his way around to the other side.
"Not some droid."
He pushed off the ice wall and ignited his jetpack, blasting into a hard-driving rush toward the next asteroid and letting off a spray of shots as he went. Something flickered off to the side. A tall figure stood on a floating chunk of metal. Lando caught only a glimpse before Gore let off shot after shot from his two-hand cannons. And then Lando was safe behind the next asteroid and panting.
"Fast,"
Gore commented wryly.
"Anyway, I'm sure my friends on Grava explained exactly what it is that's about to happen."
"Your droid murder party? Oh yes, sounds marvelous."
"Oh, it will be. And you get to be a part of it now. More so than you ever could have imagined."
Lando, still catching his breath, felt a glimmer of something very, very bad churning through his mind. A possibility. But...
"And how are you gonna do that?"
he scoffed.
"With your special magic powers?"
"Ah. You spoke with 77 Dirgios, then. Lovely. A strange character, that one. He tried so hard to crack me, and ended up cracking himself, I'm afraid. It's almost a shame. Someone that unsteady, they're liable to believe anything you say, and you don't even have to bother making up an explanation for it. They'll do that themselves. No, it's much simpler than that, really, as the truth usually is."
"Go on,"
Lando said, peeking out again. Gore wasn't on the asteroid anymore. He was nowhere that Lando could see. Probably lurking behind another one. Or sneaking up on this one. Lando swung around, rifle ready. All that met him was the endless churn of the remnants and the distant stars beyond.
While I was lurking around the renowned home city of Calrissian Enterprises, I managed to get a hold of your system-wide operational data.
Lando's chest felt tight. He tried to steady his breathing. Failed.
So, as I'm sure you understand, that means all I have to do is feed that information to my dear Phylanx, which you so kindly helped me find. And boom.
All the thousands of droids we've built over the past 2 years will go homicidal.
And the ones that the company constructed before you took over, too, of course. Back when it was Vilar Tech.
That's tens of thousands of droids.
Lando closed his eyes, trying to take in the sheer staggering death toll that was about to take place.
So you see, my plan is a thorough one, and the massacre will be complete.
Every droid in Cloud City, save a few ancient relics, was a product of either Calrissian Enterprises or Vilar. The city wasn't prepared to withstand an attack from inside like that. No city was. Chandrila, the entire New Republic might very well collapse beneath the weight of this massacre. The one they fought so hard to bring into existence. Not to mention Han's family. His son, Ben, who's probably within a meter or two of that damn calf-happy culinary droid.
Astounding when you stop and truly ponder what we're on the verge of, isn't it?
Lando looked up just in time to glimpse something flash past and disappear over the top of the asteroid. He swung hard to the side, then pointed himself upward and gunned the jetpack, blasting fast up and over the asteroid and letting loose a spray of cover fire as he rose.
You...
Fison's voice went staticky.
What's your...
A figure was zooming away from Lando. He could barely make it out in the shattered light of the distant sun, but it wasn't Gore. It looked bulkier somehow and misshapen. He spun around just in time to throw himself out of the way as a storm of blaster fire sizzled toward him from another figure jetting past above.
What was that thing?
Two more sped toward him through the remnants. They weren't shaped right at all. Each had huge, hairy arms and a small metallic head. Not helmets, but they were medical droids. Or their heads were, anyway. The rest of them was made up of what looked a mutant combination of various droids and... Wookiee parts.
That's what you would do and haunt in the forest of Kashyyyk,
Lando growled. The reply came through as only static-laced laughter, and then just faded out entirely. Fison Gore was out of range, which meant he was making a dash for the Phylanx. This would be an excellent time for Han and Chewie to show up with the full artillery of the Vermilion blazing bright. Another Wookiee-enhanced droid blasted past off to the far end of the remnants. Lando pushed off from the ice asteroid he'd been standing on and tore along the dwindling path of debris.
The Vermilion, now.
Han brought the Chevalier alongside the Vermilion and took a long, hard look. Nothing stirred on the battered transport vessel. The secret outer compartments that concealed those gun turrets hung open, their artillery cannons dangling out like gargoyles. The cockpit hatch had closed back up, and the sharp lights illuminated just the two empty seats and the worn bench behind them. Han shuddered. Something about the whole thing just felt off. He knew he should probably zip over there as quickly as possible and snatch everyone off and then get out of there. But something held him back. Gore could have rigged up an explosive trap in the airlock, but it didn't seem likely. The Powan probably wouldn't have had time for such extensive preparations. And for all Gore knew, he himself would be the only one using it.
You're always rushing into things, Han.
Han said to himself in a rough butchery of Lando's voice.
Try slowing down for once.
Easy advice to give when you weren't worried about a bunch of people you cared for being trapped on a ship that had been taken over by a killer droid-obsessed maniac. Still, It resonated somehow in a way it didn't usually. Usually, Blaster's blazing felt like not only the right, but also the singular option available. Lying never worked. Not for long. And what were negotiations if not extended, overcomplicated lies? Arn pulled the Chevalier around so the two ships were nose to nose, then leaned forward and peered over the front. A flare of light went up at the rear of the Vermilion. Its rear repulsors. Han barely had time to shove the steering apparatus to the side before the Vermilion lurched forward, skidding its front end along the starboard flank of the Chevalier. Han hit the thrusters and pulled up and out of the way of another lurching attack. He glared into the cockpit, but it was still empty. A direct head-to-head crash could have easily shattered both ships. The Vermilion banked hard toward Han and then blasted at him again, missing his portside wing by fractions of a centimeter. Han gunned the thrusters again, putting some space between the two craft, and hit the comm.
Chewie! Taka! Anyone over there want to tell me what the...
The Vermilion launched at him again, and then started firing up its hyperdrive.
Oh, no, you don't,
Han muttered, sending two blasts of ion fire directly into its external propulsors. The Vermilion spun away from him, engine sputtering like some crusty, offended bureaucrat. That's when Han saw it. There, on the rear hull. A dingy metallic shell about the size of a helmet with a smattering of wetness around it.
Whatever you are,
Han said.
You're mine now.
He closed with the Vermilion and was about to send a laser blast at the thing when the comm sputtered with static and then Taka's voice.
Chevalier, come in! Chevalier!
Taka?
Han yelled.
You've got a thing on your hull. Looks like a droid of some kind.
That's what's jacked up our whole system. We locked ourselves in my emergency security room when Fison got on board. And I was wreaking some havoc of my own from in here, but the whole op system's been going haywire ever since he showed up.
Are you still trapped in there?
Not for long, I'd say.
A roar sounded from the other end.
Chewie!
Han yelled.
Is everyone okay over there?
The Vermilion jerked sideways, and the comm went staticky again. Han shook his head and swung the Chevalier around, trying to keep the nasty little thing in his sights.
Taka!
He called into the comm.
Taka! Come in! Ah, for crying out.
There was no way to blast the thing without risking taking the whole ship out. Not from the angle Han was at. And there wasn't time. Gore could be at the phalanx already for all Han knew. The Vermilion lurched toward the Chevalier again, and this time Han pulled slightly above it and then rammed forward, crunching against the wing, and then, with the shriek of metal against metal, shoving sidewise so their airlocks were lined up. The ship's sensors let out a satisfied burp, indicating that they docked with the Vermilion. Han hit the comm.
Taka, you there, buddy?
No answer.
It's always something,
Han grumbled, throwing the Chevalier into autopilot as both ships shuddered and then screeched. That droid bug was trying to wrench the Vermilion free. Han bolted out of the cockpit and down the corridor toward the hull. If this was gonna happen, it would have to happen fast. He slammed the airlock button and climbed through as it was still sliding open. A hot blast of steam greeted him in the main room of the Vermilion. It stung his face and smelled like a swamp fart.
Chewie!
Han called, waving his hands to clear the air in front of him. A hideous face emerged from the steam. A giant, lumpy tongue dangling from its huge, salivating mouth, and both eyes clenched closed on their stalks. Taka's masked face emerged behind it.
That thing caused a backup and ruptured one of our gas lines. Take Korg!
They yelled, shoving the big slimy creature into Han's arms.
I got the others.
Wait!
Han called, but Taka had already disappeared back into the gloom. Han damn near hurled the ward across the room, but then the two ships lurched again. Instead, he just ran for the airlock, put Korg down on the other side and turned back around to find Kasha, Taka, and Chewie barreling toward him through the steam. Florks the Ugnaught tucked securely beneath the Wookiee's armpit, apparently napping.
The Masulan remnants, now.
Lando leaned forward, pointed his rifle, and gunned the propulsion booster on his jetpack. The New Republic might have been skimping on military buildup, but they had thrown a lot of the freed-up credits toward various other forms of tech. And apparently this jetpack was just one such item. The icy remnants spun on either side of Lando as he surged across the top of the diminishing junk highway. He nudged his course slightly downward to avoid the shredded wing of some transport ship that hurtled toward him, then slowed and dodged in and out of the slow-rolling junk. Up ahead, flames marked the 8 jetpacks of Gore and his mutant droids. They weren't as fast as he was, and he peered between a radiator duct and a power converter. They seemed to have paused to discuss something. Propulsors still on a low simmer, Lando skirted along under the cover of the scrap river, and then peeled off and slid behind another ice asteroid. They hadn't seen him. The Phalanx must be somewhere up ahead. They were probably finalizing their plan to reach it, but why would they stop? Either something had gone wrong, or they were setting a trap. He spun around, but the remnants and the spinning star systems were the only things awaiting him. Gore and the 7 droids were still conferring when he edged around the corner of the asteroid. If he could just get a clear shot. He hoisted the blaster rifle, steadying himself against the sheer ice wall, and clicked the electroscope into place. Fison Gore was upset. That much was clear through the telescopic lens. The Powan gesticulated wildly at his freakish droids, who were all shaking their heads. Gore pointed down at the march of junk beneath them. The droids shook their heads again. Circular lines and red digits cycled around Lando's vision field as the scope sorted through each of its potential targets and then let out a chirp, flashing bright intersecting lines over Gore's long head.
Gotcha,
Lando whispered, narrowing his eyes and easing down on the trigger. One of the droids perked up, its metal head spinning all the way around on top of its furry shoulders and glaring directly at Lando as he let off the shot. The droid slid to the side ever so slightly, taking the blast full on in the head and flying backward in a tangled mess. Now headless, the flailing half-Wookiee body spun through space for a few seconds as Gore and the others stared in shock. Then it simply began to come apart, piece by piece.
Damn it!
Lando yelled. The other droids all turned toward him. So did Gore, his face contorted with rage. Lando let off a few more shots that sent them scattering, and then ducked back behind the asteroid when a flurry of laser fire raced his way. He glanced out just in time to catch the tail end of Gore's jetpack flare as the Powan raced off deeper into the remnants.
Oh, no, you don't.
Lando growled, blasting out after him. He arched high over the tops of the remnants, and then adjusted his trajectory and hurtled down, back through the spinning asteroids and directly behind Gore and the 5 droids at his side.
5?
Lando thought with a sudden gasp of panic. That meant... Something throttled him from behind. A heavy, furry arm wrapped around his neck, yanking him backward. Lando almost let go of his blaster rifle in shock, but managed to hold tight, then swung it around, battering the metal and fur body behind him. They pulled into a sharp climb now that Lando was pointed upward, and through his watering eyes, he could just make out the forms of Gore and his droid speeding off.
Help me,
a mournful voice whispered into Lando's earpiece.
What?
The voice sounded despondent and possibly mechanical, although it was hard to tell through the deep space interference and comm system. Was it the same droid that was choking him? Because...
Help me.
Lando reached for his hip blaster with one hand while trying to pull the Wookiee arm away from his throat with the other. Neither was working very well. The droid had him hemmed up tight. A flash of movement up ahead caught his eye, and he looked up to see another tall figure blasting through the remnants toward him. Lando could make out long, furry appendages amid metal and mech layers. He groaned, still reaching for that hip blaster. This was about to get very ugly. The incoming figure pulled a weapon. It looked like a sword made of spinning chains, and pulled it back, racing closer and closer. Lando squirmed, then squinted, recognition dawning on him, as the Wookiee blasted past, swinging that chainsword in a wide and precise arc that missed Lando's neck by centimeters.
Chewie!
Lando yelled, as the droid's grip on him suddenly went limp. He whirled around, saw the metallic head floating off in one direction, and the body another. Chewie looped around for another run at the droid, barking a quick acknowledgement without so much as a glance at Lando. Chewie insisted, swinging the chainsword in a fierce upward cut that severed the droid's stolen Wookiee arm clean off its body.
I got this.
Lando nodded his thanks and blasted off after Gore, just as that strange, disconsolate voice sounded again in his ear.
Help me, please.
Was the droid somehow begging for help even after being decapitated by Chewie? Lando shook his head, gunning his jetpack up a notch. With this madman on the loose, even remorseful homicidal droids were possible, Lando supposed. But still...
Please.
The voice was louder now, and definitely a droid. But Lando didn't have time to figure it out. He hurled along the Junk River, blitzed past a huge chunk of the shattered ice moon, and then swung around a curve in the asteroid field. He was too late. Up ahead, a huge mottled cube made out of scrap metal marked the source of the river of junk. It was fizzing along through the ice field at a crawl, propulsed by a series of giant, low-burning thrusters. Two armored gunships escorted it, one on each side. The phalanx must be inside that junk hold. Gore and the droids bolted toward it, about 10 clicks away and closing fast.
Help me,
the voice begged. Lando narrowed his eyes and shot after them, pushing his jets to maximum speed. There was no way he'd catch them, and no way he could get a clean shot off while moving this fast. But he raised the blaster rifle, leaning all the way forward, and squeezed off one shot, then another. Both went wide, but they came close enough to make Gore glance back.
Please, please.
The voice in Lando's ear shivered with urgency now.
Destroy me!
Destroy?
Lando said out loud.
I thought you wanted me to help you.
He shook his head. This distraction was maddening when he was already too far behind Gore to stop him. He let off a few more shots and zoomed forward.
Lando?
Another voice said.
Head!
Lando didn't bother spinning around. If they were close enough to raise him in this pit of no reliable comm service, they'd be popping up at any moment, hopefully with their ion cannons blazing. And anyway, he still needed to keep his eye on Gore, who was about 3 clicks away from the giant scrap hold.
Lando, everyone's okay, and we're coming toward you as fast as we can, old buddy. But listen, we're not the only ones.
What?
Lando glanced around. The distant stars twinkled and nebulae writhed. The remnants glinted as they spun through the shadows. The debris slid past, vomited forth from the underside of the massive junk hold that Gore was about to disappear into.
Where?
A group of signals is coming from the other side of that big gloating trash heap. Can't get a clear reading on them yet.
Help me.
The droid voice moaned, cutting off Han.
Please, L3.
Lando blinked.
L3? I don't understand. I'm not L3.
Who? Where?
He glanced around again.
Assault team,
the droid said with an air of finality. Lando let off a few more shots, dinging one of the droids, but not enough to stop it. He'd have to go into the thing after them. And that wouldn't be pretty. Something metallic flashed out from under the junk hold. Then something else. More droids? Lando cursed and raced forward. Gore and his team were slowing, now pulling up. 6, now 7 droids had blasted around and now hovered in battle formation in front of the junk hold facing Gore. They all had squat, disc-shaped heads and a single eye, just like L3. But their bodies were all heavied-up armor and various killing tools, and ion cannons swung over each of their shoulders, clicking into place.
L3 assault team!
Lando yelled, blasting away as he pushed toward the 2 droid squads facing off in front of the junk hold. Explosions rocked the remnants as both sides opened fire.
Cantonica, about 10 years ago. Cle Pastera gazed languidly through the tinted glass of the prep room. On the other side of the window, everybody who was anybody in the galactic underworld had assembled. Now they were mingling in time to the swinging clacks and moans of some Carvathian Trusk septet. Adjusting their silky pastichean fur-lined corsets and fitted Akaiklin suits, they clinked glasses and murmured pleasantries to beings they would one day have murdered, chattered amiably about comings and goings in the illegal Kalumen pyrojet trade, the surge in bantha milk prices, the state of the galaxy amid a rising imperial presence. And they had all come there to see him. They thought they were there just to barter for a super powerful device. Really, they would bear witness to the rise of Cle Pastera, and with his rise, the dawn of a new era for the wandering star. No more quaint backroad slumdoggery, no more dusty relics or useless protocols burdened by archaic lore. The world would behold a criminal syndicate that was about the future, and Cle would be the one to usher in that new dawn. And it would all begin in just a few moments. And so many had already gathered to watch. It was a beautiful thing. It was a terrifying thing. Fenbolt! Cle called, letting the velvet curtain slip back down over that panorama of excess and indulgence. Another snip of parfait spice,
Of course, Master Cle.
The small droid nodded and sped smoothly across the room on the single wheel his torso balanced precariously on.
Would you like it lining a fresh calf, perhaps?
Out in the sparkling new amphitheater, the Carvathians rounded out their tune to a ripple of polite applause and launched right into another. Its fresh, vivacious strains and wild, pounding rhythms made their way through the tinted glass, could be felt rumbling along the floor and right up Klee's leg and into his heart. Cle sighed. Did you know, Fenbolt, that the Trusk is a style of music that was once performed exclusively in the dingiest of establishments and at pitches so high that only the Carvathians could hear it? Fenbolt curved his long mouth into an elegant frown.
I was not aware of that, Master Cle. Would you like your parfait spice lining a fresh calf, sir?
This was back during the Old Republic, of course. There are still recordings of some early Trusk bands, but many were destroyed because the archivist thought they were blank. Cle chuckled. The whole thing was so absurd, and odd bits of information always helped him take his mind off stressful things. Can you imagine, Fenbolt?
I cannot, sir. Sir, would...
Yes, line the calf, Fenbolt.
Very good, sir.
The Valens player ripped into a wailing solo, while the other 6 Carvathians teetered along. Cle closed his eyes, willed away the uneasy feeling that too much was at stake for this many hands to be in the pot. Explosions were just about guaranteed when you put such a rabid assortment of deadly, fancy underlords in an enclosed space. He shook his head, sliding a finger along the narrow, indented crevices that ran the length of his face.
Ahem, ahem,
the droid coughed. He was standing there with a hollowed-out bone full of calf on a tray when Klee opened his eyes. He held it up, and Klee reached down and took it, let the tiny parfait particles tingle his lips as he sipped. Exhaled. I am about to make an excessive amount of money. Did you know that, Fenbolt?
It seems so, sir.
The money I'm about to make, it will be more than even the Grand Vygoth will be able to contend with. Do you understand? What I'm saying is, after tonight, everything changes. The Grand Vygoth will be forced to either pay his respects to me or pay the price. I've been his crony for far too long. It would have gone on indefinitely, you know. As the old man just withered and crumbled and his syndicate, our syndicate, collapsed around his fetid, rotting corpse. Fenbolt mused idly. Of course, much more than that will change, you know. The Wandering Star will take its place among the great syndicates of our time. A new world lies ahead of us. The parfait was doing its thing now. That ease of motion, like Klee could just extend his arm all the way across the room to refill his glass. Of course, he didn't have to, did he? Fenbolt was a good servant. Odd name for a droid, Klee mused passingly. Fenbolt? Most of your kind are named with letters and numbers.
Indeed,
Fenbolt said emptily.
Master Gore bestowed it upon me.
Master Gore, eh? A tiny, probably insignificant tremble of something not quite right passed through Klee. The spice, most likely. It was known to sometimes cause little spates of paranoia and, in rare cases, mortal despair. Even more likely, nerves. For all those years blasting and slicing his way through the Utapan and then galactic underworld, Klee had never really gotten the hang of talking in front of large groups of important people. Anyway, what did it matter if some droid called his tech toady master? It didn't matter. Once this sale went through, in fact, absolutely nothing would matter except what to do with all those mountains of cash and the outpouring of fear, respect, and potential usurpers that would accompany it. No one could be trusted. But of course, no one could ever be trusted, so that would be nothing new. There would simply be many more resources to suddenly have to protect. And of course, moves would have to be made to shore up power. The corridor portal slid open, startling Klee from his reverie.
Ah! Young Pastera!
The Vygoth chortled, easing his way into the room. Gore was with him, tall and silent and creepy as ever. A damn shadow, that one. But an obedient one, and that was what mattered. Klee rose, suppressing the bristle that arced upward within him at the old man's never-ending use of diminutives. Young Pastera, little Bilnak, small man Gore. Never mind that every member of the Wandering Star was taller than the Grand Vygoth. Good evening, Grand Vygoth. Klee kissed the ancient papery skin on those long fingers for what he hoped would be the last time.
Very good. Are we ready, then?
A flavored calf with parfait, perhaps?
Fenbolt offered.
Ah, ha, ha, the old Powan tittered. The world keeps changing, it seems. The old world is disappearing every day, eh? Was it time when such indelicacies were enjoyed, but not spoken of so openly, you know, young droid?
Young droid? Klee scowled inside himself. Were there no limits to the condescension of this moldy fruit basket?
The times have changed,
Fenbolt replied, preparing the calf with a bustle and whir. cheeky little thing, though, Klee thought, and that ripple of disconcerting unease blossomed to life again and then vanished back into annoyance as the Grand Vygoth let out a raspy chuckle. Klee's eyes flew to Gore, who remained still as a stone in the shadows of the room.
"Ryas, young droid," the Vygoth said. "I suppose I will, then. Meanwhile, small man Gore here says this should be quite a night. He was just regaling me with tales of the first trial run. Last year, was it? And all the data he retrieved and such. Quite a device, hmm? I must say, it was all a good bit beyond my scope of understanding. Everything is in order for this auction, I take it. Yes, young Werabas?
Pastera, your grand.
What's that now?
Fenbolt held the tray with a steaming cup of calf up to the Grand Vygoth. Your drink, Grand, Klee said dryly.
Of course.
The ancient hunched over Powan took the cup with a trembling hand, spilling half of it on Fenbolt.
Yes,
he muttered, sipping it and smacking his lips loudly.
Now, what was it you were saying?
Nothing, Klee muttered. Nothing at all.
I suppose it's time, isn't it, young droid?
Quite,
Fenbolt replied. Klee turned to the door and rolled his eyes. The bright lights of Canto Bight's amphitheater sent tiny dancing color shapes across Klee Pastera's vision as he scanned the audience for another bid.
Understand,
he said slyly as another wave of muttered gossip sizzled through the crowd.
This device exceeds even the wildest rumors you have heard about it, and I know you have heard the rumors, This I know. We all have.
In the seats behind him, the Grand Vygoth snored, and Faizen looked on impassively. Wandering star gunners in full-body armor stood on either side of the stage, blaster rifles at the ready.
The rumors have been rumbling through the underworld since we set out to create the Phalanx, and not a one of them is...
A hand shot up in the darkness.
45 from the Pantoran in black, thank you. Not a one of them is an exaggeration. Not one is untrue. You all know that we Powans are not built for hyperbole.
Scattered laughter and one enthusiastic, well, that's for damn sure, followed by even more chuckling.
We are not programmed for it, so to speak. 50 from the lovely young lady in the blue ball gown. We appreciate you, my dear. Do I hear 55?
Show us how it works, someone yelled. Klee sighed with a smile.
That's the kind of thing that must be done for an object whose power is in doubt. This is not such a thing, And you all know this because you know exactly who is in the room, and who would know, and who is putting down the big credit,
That shut them up. The girl in blue was with the Gotra, and everyone knew it. Plus, the blue stars were there. Even the Empire had a representative, and all of them were bidding and bidding hard, which told more of a story than any demonstration could.
That's what I thought,
Klee said. Soon, there would be a winner. Quite possibly that Gotra rep. And the money would be in Klee's account within the hour, and so his takeover would begin.
Who has 55?
Someone raised their hand. Klee couldn't make out who in the glare of those ridiculous stage lights, and anyway, something rustled behind him.
55!
A whir of motion flurried past the corner of his eye. He heard the blaster screech and even heard the clamor from the startled crowd before he felt anything at all. Then some smoke cleared that he hadn't even realized had been there, and he was looking straight through his own hand, through a charred hole in his own hand. Delicate plumes of gray smoke still wafted from the sparkling, blackened bits of flesh. Then the pain burst through him, and it came in a relentless, ever-widening arc of sharp fury. Klee knew he'd fallen to his knees because he felt the floor clap against them. He'd been shot before, sure, but always in battle, never mid-sentence, never in front of so many people. The world thrust itself back into order around him. Screams rose up, the hurried thunder of many bodies rushing around, more blaster fire slicing through the air. The guards would... He turned, saw one escorting the Grand Vygoth toward the back room. The other gunner lay in a long, crumpled heap, yellow blood spreading in a pool beneath him.
What?
Klee muttered, blinking again at his torn open hand. Go! A little voice inside him yelled. He recognized that voice. It was the same one that had raised the tiny cry of alarm when Fenbolt called Gore master. And where was that damn fool Gore anyway? Probably cowering under a chair somewhere, crying for his family. It didn't matter now, though. Nothing mattered except escape. Whoever had shot him, they wouldn't be backstage. Not if that's where the Grand Vygoth was being taken, anyway. And if they were, that armored guard would make quick work of them. Klee rose unsteadily and ducked toward the back door. He didn't know why his legs kept trembling when it was only his hand that had been blasted through, but it didn't matter, did it? Nothing mattered except escape. He shoved the door open and gasped. The Vygoth lay sprawled on the ground, his hunched back making him look like a crooked stick. Blood spluttered from his mouth and speckled his white Akaclan shirt. Fenbolt stood by his head, an extended slit blade in one metallic hand, coated in red. The guard stood by the far door, motionless.
Young!
Vygoth gasped. Sure, Klee had plans of his own to do away with the old underboss, but still, seeing him lying there, dispatched so casually at the hands of a tiny droid? Fenbolt's now bright red eye glared suddenly up at Klee.
Poison!
The Vygoth said at last, as if he was just now realizing something important, but didn't have the strength to finish the thought. A moment too late, it occurred to Klee that the Vygoth was simply saying the name of someone whose face he saw, and for once getting the name right. A foot planted itself sturdily into Klee's back and then shoved him forward into the room. Already weak and terrified, he toppled forward onto the Vygoth. No! Klee Pastero wouldn't go out like this. He hadn't been in battle in years, and he could feel how all that leisure had gummed up his warrior spirit, not to mention his muscles and tendons. Still, no. His dagger was already out and swinging when he untangled himself from the Vygoth's heaving, sputtering body and lunged for the far corner of the room, away from Fenbolt, away from the doorway he'd been kicked through. Gore stood there, smiling.
Young Faizen!
The Vygoth gasped again, still useless, even in near death.
What have you done?
Klee whispered, rising to his full height and pulling another dagger from his inner robes. Both blades were curved and serrated Ryloth steel. Faizen just smiled that crooked smile of his as Fenbolt raced toward Klee, razor first. Klee parried the little droid's attack easily, but then something heavy clattered on top of his hand, knocking his blade from it. The guard's baton. Klee was quick, though. His old warrior ways hadn't left him entirely. He pivoted and swung his other dagger across his body and then down the guard's wrist with a chop that, by all rights, should have cleaved right through his flesh and bone, severing that hand clean off. Instead, the blade ricocheted with a jaw-jarring clang, and the hand that should have been detached reached out and wrapped firmly around Klee's forearm. Klee looked up, saw two red eyes gleaming out of the shadows beneath the guard's helmet, and knew it was over. A whir sounded below and behind him, and then a sharp plume of pain erupted from behind both his knees. And then Klee was on the ground, gasping in agony, his own blood spreading around him in an ever-expanding, shining island. He rolled over, tried to skitter away, but his legs gave out, both knee tendons slashed and useless, and he slipped and splashed back down. Gore stepped forward, still smiling.
"Sranfrak Creek!" Klee yelled.
Bison stopped, cocked his head with a puzzled crease of his brow.
"Sranfrak Creek,"
Klee said again, the words a lifeline, a chance.
"What's that supposed to do?" Fison asked, frowning.
"I know you've been sending money every month to your parents. I tracked it,
set my gunners to make sure. They've been instructed to set fire to your family home and kill both of them if anything happens to me." Bison's face crinkled, his eyes closed. Everyone had something they loved, Klee mused, willing his heart to slow. It had been a close call, but his paranoid mind had paid off this time. Fison had one hand over his eyes, his shoulders trembling. Klee knew enough not to say anything more. Pushing too hard could spin everything the wrong way, and as it was, the moment teetered on the tiniest of pinheads. "Eh," Fison Gore sputtered. Then he broke out into what Klee now realized was a full-throated, uncontrollable cackle.
"You thought..."
Bison shook his head, wiping his eyes, composed himself, tried again.
You thought... Oh, Klee, that is adorable."
He looked up, the blood-soaked floor glinting in his black eyes.
"I said goodbye to my family forever 8 years ago when I vanished in the Deadlands. Did you not realize that?"
Klee's heart surged, battering a desperate distress signal up his throat and along the back of his head.
"Young Fison,"
the Vygoth stuttered. Klee blinked. Then a whir sounded, and Fenbolt's razor spun to life above his head. The last thing Klee Pastera saw were those shining red eyes.
Part 5. The Chevalier, now. "All right," Han muttered, dipping and swerving the Chevalier through the spinning ice asteroids and space trash.
"All right, all right, all right."
"So, what you're saying is, all right?"
Taka asked. Han, brows furrowed, had been concentrating so hard on navigating at top speed through the remnants, he tuned out the young spy completely.
"Something like that. Get on the guns and blast a few of these ice pops out of our way for me, would you? We're running late."
"Aye, aye, Captain."
Taka saluted and pulled up the gunner board. Han swung the Chevalier into a roll directly at one of the larger remnants, and the two laser cannons lit up the sky, smashing the ice asteroid into a billion glittering shards that tinkled against their blast window as they hurled through.
"They're up, ill!"
Lando's voice came in shakily over the comm.
"What's that, Lando? Try again,"
Han said. The reply was only static.
"Lando?"
Up ahead, sudden luminous bursts of laser fire sent glints of light ricocheting across the shiny surfaces of the remnants.
"That can't be good,"
Han grumbled. Taka just grunted and blasted another asteroid out of the way as they swooped low, re-entering the trash stream.
"Get ready,"
Han said.
"I think we're coming up on the..." Ah!
They swung around a wide turn, following the flow of debris.
"See? People say the Falcon is a pile of junk. But that, right there..."
In the distance, a battle raged around a gargantuan cube of rusted metallic debris. Han squinted. He couldn't quite make out who was fighting whom, but it looked like...
"Are those droids?" Taka said.
"I think so," Han said. "More than that."
He cocked his head, taking the Chevalier into a smooth glide toward the melee.
"A bunch of them look a lot like an old piloting droid Lando used to roll with.
The cockpit lights flickered off, and with a sputtering sigh, the whole ship just seemed to give up the ghost entirely.
Hans said. What did you do?
Dim emergency lights flicked on, illuminating both Hans and Taka's hands flying over the control panels.
Me? Taka snapped. No one told you to use this half-defenseless New Republic Gamma glider.
Well, your ship was a little busy being filled with poison gas by a tiny evil droid creature, wasn't it?
All I'm saying is, don't play...
Something made a heavy thudding sound down the corridor behind them, and Han shushed Taka.
Do you think another one of those things?
Taka whispered.
I don't know,
Han said back.
Seems like it would have already had plenty of opportunity to shut us down if it had been on us. And I'm sure Gore is up there somewhere in the firefight.
The screech of laser fire rang out. Han and Taka glanced at each other, then leapt up, drawing their blasters, and sprinted down the corridor. The door swung open to reveal a series of red bolts flashing past. The emergency lights lining the upper walls cast an eerie glow on Kasha Batine's silhouette, where she crouched behind an overturned table and let loose one precisely placed blaster shot after another. At the far side of the room, KX security droids climbed over the fallen smoking bodies of their brethren as they clamored to get out of the storage closet, eyes glowing bright red in the darkness.
Kasha!
Han yelled as Taka started firing too.
What happened?
He let off a few shots, then dashed over behind the table with Kasha.
You know as much as I do, she said. I was minding mine when the lights all went out. Then that door slid open, and, well, here we are.
She pulled a second blaster from her hip and stood, unleashing with both hands. Each shot found its mark, but the droids kept coming.
Where's Peekpa?
Han asked. A high-pitched screech rang out, and a dark, furry shape dropped from the ceiling onto one of the approaching droids.
Ah, well, there she is.
Kasha and Han unleashed a hail of blaster fire on the droid, knocking it to its knees, and Peekpa scrambled down and scurried off in a hurry.
We can't hold them off forever, Kasha said. I have no idea how many there are.
Cockpit! Taka yelled. Come on!
Peekpa was already barreling down the hallway ahead of them. Han sprinted in last, slammed his fist against the door panel on his way past, and then hurried in and slid into the pilot's seat. Beside him, Taka was feverishly trying to restore power.
They must have cut it from some secondary source wherever they were stored,
Han said.
You didn't...
Kasha let her voice trail off.
No, Kasha,
Han growled.
I did not check every broom closet and back room of this ship before we took control of it.
Just asking.
Yeah, well...
Skriba! Chutuk!
Peekpa pointed out. Everyone turned just as the sound of wrenching metal erupted from the corridor.
That door's not gonna hold long,
Han warned.
Peekpa, can you slice into the system and do some kind of override like you did to the Vermilion when Gore was on it?
Peekpa launched into a rambling explanation of something, which Kasha summarized as...
No.
Terrific, Han grunted.
She says restarting power when there is none is a whole other bag of tree worms from remotely taking control of a fully powered ship.
Fair enough. Taka, how long before we...
Lights flickered on around them, and the engine hummed to life.
That long?
Taka smirked. Then everything went dark again with a collective fizzle and sigh. Everyone looked at Taka, who growled.
Why is there an override to the cockpit power anyway?
Han complained.
It's standard on New Republic ships, Taka said. In case they get hijacked, it gives the crew a chance to take back over. And it worked pretty well on mine just a few minutes ago, I might add. If it hadn't been in the throes of a droid slicer attack on top of everything else, I might have been able to boot Gore out myself.
Yeah, well,
Han said.
Bottom line is,
Taka cut in,
we gotta get to that secondary power source to override back to the cockpit.
Great,
Han said.
That shouldn't be...
Another bang sent shudders into the cockpit.
Difficult at all.
the Masulan remnants, now. Lando jetted along the edge of the raging droid firefight, spun away.